The Numinous Podcast with Carmen Spaniola.
A highly professional intuitive will never predict the future of anybody, because such a person knows that the future is full of endless possibilities, and it's up to each individual to choose that future, and that future is chosen by decisions and choices that are made in the moment.
Hi there, and welcome to the Numinous Podcast, where we have interesting conversations with everyday folks about the mystery of life. This podcast is a complement to the Numinous School, an online intuition development course for people who want their self-awareness to serve a greater good. I'm your host, Carmen Spaniola, and the woman you heard at the top of the show is this week's guest, Judy G. Judy is my intuition development coach. She's also a breathwork trainer, transpersonal counselor, and runs a school for integral consciousness in the south of France. This week we're talking about intuition, social scorn, self-esteem, and what it takes to go pro as a professional intuitive. I connected with Judy over Skype. She was at home in Saint-Saturnin-les-Aptes in Provence, France. So Judy, I came across your work in 2000. I purchased your beautiful book, Intuition, Awakening to Your Inner Guide, which you wrote in 1999. And I want to thank you for this book. And I feel like I owe you so much, so much money, because I've reread it probably 1,000 times. It's so fantastic. And I felt compelled and drawn to meet you as soon as I read this book. But it took me, I think, about another 7 years before I searched for you and found your email address, because I had those two statements that come up for me anyway, so often on the spiritual path, and that was, I'm not ready and I'm not worthy. You know, what could I possibly bring to a conversation with this woman who's written this amazing book? And now I come to understand that I'm not ready and I'm not worthy are probably the two most common responses that I experience with my clients, even on the spiritual path. And I think it really comes down to a matter of spiritual self-esteem. A person could have very high, you know, social self-esteem or physical self-esteem, but perhaps have low intellectual self-esteem. And I think for many people who are intuitive, that sense of being perhaps ashamed or feeling unworthy of their gifts or embarrassed to talk about them is pretty common. So I'm very curious how you have dealt with that in your life. And when you wrote this book, I wonder if that was quite a threshold for you, putting this out in the world. Have you always trusted your intuition and followed it and been confident about it, or did you have to work up to that?
First of all, Carmen, I'd just like to thank you for the acknowledgement that you've given me, and I really can't answer that question before I honor you, and thank you for inviting me onto your show. And I find that already the comments that you've made in this lead-in is very, very, very relevant when you're talking about people not feeling ready or not feeling worthy of on a spiritual level. I think those are very, very pertinent words. And when it comes to myself and this question about did I always trust my intuition, or did I have to work up to that? Did something have to happen to me in order for me to be able to write the book about intuition? Basically, I needed to leave the country I was born in to be able to dare to do that. And looking back, over into the period when I was writing that book, that was not only true for me when I was writing the book, because I wrote the book when I was living in France, but even to study my intuition, to develop my intuition, I had to leave the country of my birth. I had to leave the Southern Hemisphere and go across to the Northern Hemisphere. And I think that is a really, actually a common issue for people wanting to honor their spiritual calling. It's almost like you have to have a coming out of the spiritual closet.
Yeah.
And very often, in order to do that, in order to become themselves, people have to go away from the place where they originally began, because it's really, really difficult to come out and be who you are when you're surrounded by your family and when you're surrounded by people that know you. You know, it's a very, very common a common story that says, you know, you can't be a Buddha in your own hometown, because who's going to take you seriously? You know, who's going to take you seriously when they know you, who you were in the beginning and from the beginning? And that was certainly the case for me. And we often hear that. We know about so many people that they go away and they travel, they go on different pilgrimages. And it doesn't mean you might not end up back in your hometown, or you might not come back to your roots. But for me, it was certainly, I didn't know that I was going away from my home country in order to study intuition. But I knew that I couldn't do that in the place where I was. I needed to go far away. And then as I had my coming out process, as I had my training up process, I gradually got to understand that, in fact, I guess it would have been virtually impossible for me to do that if I had have been under the wings and under the eyes of my birth family.
Mm. Wow, that is an amazing story. What an incredible amount of courage to move to a whole different country to do that. I mean, I definitely understand. I had a similar experience when my intuition really started to open up was when I became pregnant and I was engaged to be married, but everything that was happening, I realized, could not be contained in the worldview of my fiancé and his Catholic family. And, you know, it was very apparent that I would not be able to walk my path without putting other people through a lot of pain. And that really wasn't what I wanted to do with my spiritual awakening. I didn't want that to mean a kind of death for others. And so I called off the wedding, and I, you know, we it all worked out fine. I co-parent with my ex, but boy, I see, as you're telling your story of having to leave your country, that in a small way, I did the same thing. And I imagine there are many, many seekers who, looking back, might realize that they also did the same. Now, you come from a highly educated family as well. Your mom is a pharmacist. Your father is a veterinarian. And so how did you come out to them? And how did you cope with the fear of, or the possibility of, scorn and judgment?
Yeah, very good question. And obviously part of that answer is I've already given you, because I went to the other side of the planet, and that was my first way of dealing with it, because in fact I didn't want to deal with it. But what happened for me is as you said, my mom, she was a pharmacist, and my dad was trained as a vet, and they were highly professional people. And they were, luckily my mother was a pharmacist, but she was an artist in disguise. And so she was always a lot more lenient and allowing with me. So on the one hand, I had a mother who was saying to me, you know, follow your passion. You can be whatever you want to be. My first studies were in graphic art, but that didn't satisfy me. And I found that kind of too self-centered, and then I decided that I really wanted to work in alternative medicine. And so when I told my mum that I was going to study acupuncture and naturopathy, because that's where I began when I was 21, she said, go for it. You know, that's a really interesting, innovative field. And, you know, don't know anything about it, but follow your heart, follow your heart. So I had this very, very encouraging mother who regretted that she didn't follow her heart, because she actually went on later to become an art teacher herself and to do a fine arts degree and to work much more creatively. So I had this mother who was saying the biggest gift that you can give to yourself and to the world is to be yourself and go for it. Discover what that is and don't let anybody talk you out of it. And then I had a father who was very strict and very judgmental, and who was saying to me, you know, you're basically a lost cause anyway. And that was because I'd already had a child very young, and so I'd already stepped way out of the accepted limit of things, because I was a high school mother. And so his solution to me was the best thing that you can do is go to a secretarial school and become a good secretary, you know, like that, you know, and like that, there might be hope for you. And so he was completely against me doing art studies and wouldn't support me in that, because he found that too, you know, unreliable. And so when I came back at 21 years old and said, well, I'm going to become a healer, and I'm going to become an acupuncturist and you know, maybe a naturopath. And this was 30, 40 years ago, and acupuncture and naturopathy was not very well known then. This was his answer, was, you know, you need to be a secretary. And I said, Dad, there's no way I am going to be a secretary. I mean, there is no way. That's out of the question. I'm not going to do that. So he was very, very against me doing those studies, and so I had to pay my own way through college to do them, which wasn't easy, because I had a young child and I was very rebellious and determined that certainly my father was not going to dictate my life path to me. So I had a lot of resistance on one side and encouragement on the other side, and it won't surprise anybody to understand that by that point my parents were divorced anyway. So there was no discussion between them. And as it turned out, I spent a couple of years studying acupuncture and naturopathy and felt that it wasn't exactly what I wanted. It wasn't far off, but it wasn't really that. And so that's when I left Australia and I went to the Bay Area in the States in 1980, and that's where I started to study breathwork, and that's where I did my studies in psychic development. I stayed over there for several years, and basically I really didn't have much contact with my family during that time, because I was really, really busy studying and working and then earning a living. But in the few conversations I did have with my family, I had my mother always saying, well, that sounds fascinating. I've got no idea what it is. But, I mean, I do not know what you're talking about. But as long as you're happy and just keep following your heart, and as long as you've got enough money to eat and, you know, food on the table. And so she was helping me as much as she could, certainly with moral support. And then I would have an occasional conversation with my father. And at that point he was saying to me, Judy, you know, what's wrong with acupuncture? You know, couldn't you just come back to Australia and become an acupuncturist? You know, and so he had no idea what I was doing, my father. And So then after several years, by which time I'd finished those studies and I'd established myself in the Bay Area, and it was actually time for me to go back to Australia, my father had no idea still what I was doing, but he could see that I'd survived. And that was my job, that I was managing to get myself around the world, and I was managing to put my child through school, and he, as time went on, he got less and less skeptical. He got more and more curious. He after several years later, I was living in France. I'd published my book. I was getting well established in France. He came to visit me. As it turns out, at that point in my life, I was working a lot. I was earning quite a lot of money. I actually had a Porsche, and my father started to get seriously impressed, especially when I took him for a drive in my Porsche. And it was just a kind of a little old Porsche, you know. It actually wasn't a top of the line Porsche, but it was a Porsche. It was a good car, and it got me around. I was driving around for work a lot, and on one of those trips to France, he said to me, you know, I have to tell you, Judy, that when people ask me about my children and what my children do, he said, when I get to you, I say to them, well, my daughter's a clairvoyant. She lives in the south of France and she drives a Porsche. And he said, you know, it's a conversation stopper. He said, I have to say I've been taking advantage of that. He said, I don't have any idea what you do and I can't explain what you do to anybody, but it's, you know, everybody is impressed to know that I have a daughter that, like, lives there and does that and drives a Porsche. He said, so... No, you're good for a conversation at a social event.
That's so great.
So at that point I felt that I was starting to win my father over. So certainly every time he came over to visit me, I reassured him that I was living, you know, in a solid place, and my son was turning into a solid citizen. And so gradually, as the years went by, he got more and more curious. My mother by then was not only curious, she was attending some of my classes when I was over in Australia. She was helping me to find clients. She was absolutely impressed with me. You know, she was all the time true to form, a staunch follower, a staunch believer, proud of me because I was daring to create a life for myself and follow my artistic direction and to create a career out of a vocation. So she was just amazing, my mum. I'm very, very grateful to my mum. And the end of the story really with my father is that he just kept getting more and more curious, and so then we went through a certain phase where he started to test me. He'd say, okay, Judy, I've got a problem at work. There's a dilemma at work, and so I want to give you the overview of the problem, and I'd like you to do an intuitive reading about it, and I'd like to see. So he'd give me this, you know, the minimum of information, right? I'd be like, you know, I almost be like blindfolded, my hands tied, right, in this laboratory contrived conditions by the big vet, you know, with absolutely no additional information. And the first time I did that with him, I have no memory at all about what was the issue I was looking at, but I'll never forget when I opened my eyes up at the end of the session, he was sitting there and he was looking at me, and he had this look on his face which was like, I mean, where did you come from? You know? You mean you are an extraterrestrial? I mean, how did you do that? He was gobsmacked. So wow. He was really impressed with the information that I came up with. And I think at that, you know, so slowly he, despite his skepticism, he gained respect for me. And then as it turned out with my dad, I ended up being with him for the last 4 weeks of his life. He suddenly kind of rather unexpectedly took a downturn in his health and when I was visiting him. And so I ended up accompanying him in that last few weeks of his life. And we had it was a very, very special for me because in that last couple of weeks, I was really nursing him and working with him about pain management and working with him about relaxation and just helping him to move towards the passage of his death. And on quite a few occasions in that last couple of weeks, he'd actually stop what he was doing and he'd look at me and he'd say, "I never really realized this," he said, "but you are a doctor. You're a doctor. You're really doctoring me and you're doing such a good job of looking after me. I understand now who you are and what you do." It was very, very, very beautiful.
Wow, that is.
Very, very beautiful. Huh. He went, you know, from being the most skeptic person to being a very, very grateful, very, very grateful and appreciative person. And of course, it was wonderful for me because the respect and acknowledgement of one's parents is so important in developing self-esteem. And I consider myself very fortunate to have been there in those last weeks when he kind of went full circle and, you know, he was delirious on morphine, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I don't care about that. What I care about is that those moments when we had where he was surrendering into my hands and he was getting that, you know, that intimacy and that closeness and that being helped to move towards that place that where he was going, which is what our intuition is part of what we do as healers.
Yes. And what a beautiful moment of lucidity when he saw you so clearly and you had the opportunity to be seen for who you really are after all that time. And as you said, from our parents, what a gift, because for many of us, I know for me, I've never had that experience, but the idea, the hope that the person who has brought you into the world and who should be able to see you finally does one day, that just is that's so inspiring. Now, you talked about how much you had to work, you know, in the early years as you were getting yourself established in the Bay Area, and then you relocate to a new country, have to reestablish yourself as a professional intuitive and a healer. I can only imagine how much you had to hustle and how much you were working. And having been a single parent for several years myself, it's a juggling act for sure. And so to hear your father say that you've really made a career out of a vocation must have felt very affirming. And you really have. You know, I consider you and everybody that I've introduced to you through your book considers you a pioneer in this area of professional intuition work, because you have elevated the standard of professionalism in this vocation. And so in your opinion, what does it take to be a professional intuitive, to really elevate your practice from the hobby, the vocation you do for friends or family, or maybe friends of friends who come to you, and really make a career where you're living in the south of France driving a Porsche?
The I don't have that Porsche anymore, by the way. Well, I don't drive it, actually. I put it out to retirement. It's there for emergencies. But that's just so sweet about the Porsche and about parents, you know, what impresses people. Because I don't think it's a car that impresses people, and it's certainly not a car that makes a professional of us. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, every little bit helps. Huh? I think that in the profession of any profession of in alternative medicine, particularly intuitive work, which is, let's face it, I mean, it's like way out there, huh? You know, we're way out in this kind of zone where it's really difficult for most people to take intuition work seriously. And so it is out. We are out on the front line, and I think that in order to be taken seriously, we have to have certainly the conviction that what we're doing is valuable and worthy, and has a rightful place in the world and is useful. I think everybody for themselves has to really come to that understanding that intuition is a gift, and it's a gift that needs to be honored, and we have to have a certain amount of self-esteem and to trust in that intuition. But I think also we can only succeed professionally as intuitives if we have a very strong code of ethics, and if we have a commitment to integrity. I think it's that above everything, when we're meeting people that are potential clients, people come to somebody else for counseling or for coaching to be accompanied if they get who you are, if they get a good feeling about you. And so the language that we use is important, of course, but more than anything, I would say there is this question about, are we walking our talk? Are we embodying the qualities that are important to us? Are we modeling being intuitive? Mm-hmm. And people get that. The fact is, because we all are very intuitive, and so we all are getting a felt sense impression of other people all the time, and this is what people respond to. You know, I would say, if I come back to that example, you know, of my mother and father, my mother was an unconditional supporter of me, so, and I love her dearly and appreciate her dearly from that. You know, my father was a much harder nut to crack, and that's what cracked him. It was seeing that I was walking my talk. It doesn't mean I wasn't having difficult challenges in my life. It doesn't mean I wasn't coming undone regularly, you know, because life can be tough. But it does mean that when I was getting up and getting back on my feet and moving forward and earning a living. And in the end, I think that's what captures people's attention. If we can attract clients and students and create a school, build a school, that speaks to people. I mean, because people are clever, intelligent, and sensitive, intuitive, they come to us. People can come once, but they won't come back again, unless we're delivering the medicine, no? Unless we're giving them good medicine. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought of myself, you know, that day when my dad said, you know, you're a doctor. I mean, he doesn't know this, but way back when I began my studies in acupuncture, my heroes were the barefoot doctors, what they called the barefoot doctors in the Chinese medicine tradition. Mm-hmm. Humble, humble people, humble people going about and tending to the people in their neighborhood, in the region where they lived, you know, being humble and barefoot, you know, not putting on airs and having a minimum of tools. And I really believe in that notion of, you know, just getting up and doing your thing. And for me, there's always been this a really burning question, probably also because I come from a family of, you know, pharmacists, doctors, right, you know, medicine. We were a family of healers. Everybody does their own thing. But for me, there's always been this really burning question, like, what is medicine? What's good medicine? And I didn't, if I don't want my medicine to be vitamins and minerals, which I didn't want it to be, and if I didn't want it to be needles, because I didn't want it to be, what's good medicine? And it's a really, really interesting question for me.
And I imagine it evolves, the answer.
It evolves, yeah. And I honestly feel that the best medicine for anybody is the medicine of themselves. And that's for me been, that's been the driving question that's been pushing me forward with intuition, because this is the conclusion, if you like, that I came to after my years of study and then being on the road with my traveling medicine show, is that the very, very best medicine that anybody can have is to learn how to dive down into the essence of themselves, is how to touch their own source, is how to get in touch with their own, if they're with their own essential self, because inside that, in that place where the most essential, precious part of us is, that's all the medicine that we need, because it's the medicine of ourself. It's being in touch. It's me being in touch with myself. It's me being in touch with my truth. It's me having access to all of my inner resources. And I really believe that we do. Sometimes we need help to dive down. Sometimes we need help to reach them. And that's what a good doctor does, you know, whether they're a naturopathic doctor or a Chinese medicine doctor or an intuitive doctor, and I'm using doctor there with inverted commas because, of course, we're not qualified as medical doctors, but we're doctoring is a vocation, and like all, you know, in order to be professional, we have to be able to deliver to our clients or to our patients. And I think for professional intuitives, there's this question, really, really important question, what are we delivering? And are we delivering what we say we can deliver? And if, as an occupation, if professional intuitives come, you know, under a certain amount of skepticism, it's because it's what we're delivering is something invisible. It's words often, and then it's also, it's a state of being. So it's what are we healing when we're working as intuitives? You know, we're working on a being level. We're working on an energetic level. It's subtle work, powerful work, but subtle work.
Yeah.
And so, of course, the more Cartesian world is skeptical.
But isn't it interesting too? I don't know how often this happens to you, but I'll complete a reading, and after it settles and people are sort of putting on their coat and walking out the door, they will often say something like, you know, I sort of already knew all of that. And it's like, and so what I'll say to them is, and so wasn't that lovely that you could sit and have a conversation with the universe today about that topic? Because it is, it's information they already know, but either, you know, it was repressed, suppressed, there was fear, resistance, a blind spot, whatever it is. So, you know, I do think that it's part of my work is to help reframe what intuition really is. And it's exactly what you said. It's about being able to connect with our own medicine, that is the most powerful ritual anybody will ever do is one that they've created themselves. The most, you know, people will come to me for a reading, and so often I want them to go into trance state, or I'll offer, would you perhaps prefer to do a regression? Because I think it's way more interesting if they experience the consciousness of, you know, whatever their medicine is, than it is for me to just report back to them. And so I often find that the intuitive reading is like the gateway process that lowers the gate so that they can move through and trust that they can have the experience and get the medicine for themselves.
I agree with you 100%. And if there was, and that would be a really, really strong point in terms of I think in on a professional level of people working with their intuition to gain in credibility in the world is this notion of an intuitive reading, of an evaluation or a diagnostic, you know, whatever word we're going to put on it depending upon which part of the world we're in, any kind of intuitive perception is a starting point. As you say, it's we're opening a gateway. And I really, really like the idea of when I'm doing an intuitive reading, I'm projecting my consciousness or prolonging my consciousness into the energy field of the other person. In a way, I'm opening up that space. I'm going into a place consciously because that's the skill I have, that's the training I have. So I'm going into their inner landscape and and naming the different elements that are in there according to whatever the burning issue is that the person is working for. And then, as appropriately as I can, I'm holding their hand and taking them in there so that they can experience it for themselves and so that they can become proactive in that place. In other words, the whole focus, the whole intention of the work is to help people to get conscious inside of themselves as quickly as possible so that they're empowered to make the choices that only they can make and that only they should make.
Mm-hmm. So, so true. I love that. Okay, so Judy, this is a surprise pop question that you weren't expecting, but at the end of every episode, I ask my guest a question from the Proust questionnaire. So Marcel Proust, of course, famous for his parlor game of the questionnaire. And so my question to you is, mm-hmm. What do you consider perfect happiness?
Perfect happiness. What do I consider perfect happiness? Very, very, very interesting question, Miss Carmen. I would say perfect happiness is the capacity to be happy with whatever is in the moment to moment. That would be perfect happiness.
Yeah.
It's about being happy in an imperfect, it's being content in an imperfect world.
Well said. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Judy. This has been a fabulous conversation. I'll definitely have you back because there's so much more I want to talk to you about. But thank you for your time and your wisdom today.
And thank you to you, Carmen. It was really a pleasure for me.
Oh, that was a juicy conversation. There's just so much to reflect on in that one. But I think Judy did a beautiful job of just succinctly capturing why we explore and develop our intuition. It's so that we can get conscious inside ourselves So we can make the choices that only we can and should make. It's not about looking for outer guidance. It's about going within to find our own medicine. So great. Today's show notes can be found on my blog at carmenspagnola.com, CarmenSpagnola. That's where you'll find links to learn more about Judy. And I want to thank Judy again and thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, I'd really appreciate your review on iTunes, and please share the show far and wide so it can reach more seekers just like you. You never know who needs to hear it right now. If you'd like to keep exploring the great mystery of life with me, you can go to my website, carmenspagnola.com, and click the link in the upper right corner for the Numinous School, my online intuition development course. While you're there, sign up for my monthly email newsletter. You'll instantly receive a free meditation download, and you'll get something else free from me every month. Until next time, take care.